I'd like to do that again, Eric, just because this is very, very bad. Let's start again. Yes. Hello. My name is Johannes van der Meulen of Naman. This is the first Naman podcast in which we welcome Eric Stolterman of the Indiana University School of Informatics, where he leads the Human-Computer Interaction Design Group. Eric is a well-renowned and published author talking about design theory, design practice, design research, and particularly in the area of interaction design. Has written an excellent book called Thoughtful Interaction Design that I would recommend to anyone who's being trained as an interaction designer. Welcome, Eric, today.
Thank you.
First question I'd like to ask is, what is design theory? What is design research?
In a simple way, design research is when you study design process, or you study design practice, or you study design practitioners, and you really try to understand what they do and what the design process is all about, and how, and in a very good way, you try to figure out what's good design, what's a good design process, what works, what doesn't work. And so this, and then, of course, since it's a research, you try to formulate that in some kind of more general way. It becomes maybe a theory of design or a philosophy of design that tells you or helps people to understand what they do. That's basically the way I see it. I don't see it necessarily as a field where the intention is to solve any problems or mysteries. It's more a practical field. So design research is aimed at trying to help people who see themselves as designers to design better.
Yeah. Is there anything particularly interesting to say about interaction designers or human-computer interaction designers?
Oh, yes, of course. Every design field is special. But the interesting part is also that every design field has a commonality with other design fields. So if you're an architect, you have things in common with an interaction designer. But at the same time, you're very different because you work with different materials. An architect has his materials or her material, and in interaction design, we work with digital material or bits as material, as I like to call it. And that creates specific conditions for the way you can do the design process and the way it works, if it works well or not. So you can't really take every lesson from another design field, but you can take some lessons from other design fields into interaction design.
Refer to architecture as a discipline, a similar discipline. Are there other disciplines that you can think of that can be inspiring for interaction design?
Oh, yes. The ones I usually work with is architecture, industrial design, product design, graphic design, landscape design, urban design. Actually, today also one of the growing fields is organizational design or process design. So that's when you enter into design areas where you don't even have a tangible material to work with. You work with people and organizations and processes, but that's still a design that they do.
Is design a science?
No, it's not. And that's one of the big issues in the field today, because there is a strong attempt to push design into something that could be seen as a science. For instance, on the international arena right now, there is this notion about design science. And a lot of the big funding agencies for research are trying to push that notion, design science. And the idea is they want to make design more scientific, more, in a way, logical, rational, clean, simple, straightforward.
Deterministic.
Deterministic, exactly, because that's where you end up. And for me, that leads to a big problem, because if you do that, if it becomes deterministic, it's not really design anymore. Because what people really look for in design is to be surprised, to get creative and innovative new ways of doing things. And the more we make the process into a deterministic process, the less it's going to produce that kind of outcome that we're looking for.
Well, I forgot to, during the introduction, I forgot to say that you are Swedish by origin. But now living and working in Middle America. How is the relationship in the U.S., as far as you can look towards the coastal areas as well from Indiana, how is the relationship between researchers and practitioners in the domain of human-computer interaction in the States?
I would say that, in my experience, there is a big difference between the European way of doing research in this field and the American way today. And the European approach is much more collaborative. We often see companies like your company and other companies working together with researchers doing collaborative projects on new technologies, new interactions, and that's something you rarely see in the United States, except in a very few high-quality places like MIT, or there you can find these kind of collaborations, but otherwise it's almost non-present at all. And that's a big difference. And it makes a big difference for how the field moves forward, of course.
You've hinted at the need to have a different set of tools for beginning and expert designers. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I think that's a really important issue, because what we see is that to be a good designer means that you need to have a good experience. You need to have experience. You need to go through a large number of design projects and do design, actual design work, in order to develop your design skills. That means that the tools that you can use as a non-skilled designer or a beginner must be of a different kind than the ones you can use when you're a highly experienced and highly skilled designer. And this is not really something that is always recognized in the field. And that also creates a lot of problems. I think that, for instance, there have been a great discussion lately in the research field, in the HCI field, that a lot of the tools and methods that are produced by researchers are too difficult to learn. They are too time-consuming for practicing designers. And I think that it's not necessarily true. If you're a really, really good an experienced designer, you can probably use those methods and tools if you just take the time to learn them. But they are extremely difficult to use for a beginner. And we don't see anyone right now who provides tools that might work for beginners. And I think we should try to come up with that. We can see some attempts right now. But
can you think of an example?
Well, one example is the whole area of patterns, of design patterns. And there are some books that have come out recently.
Tidwell,
for instance, is a very nice book. I like that very much because it gives a beginner a sense of the richness and also of the difficulty of choosing your design. I would say an experienced designer doesn't really need that book, because an experienced designer have all those patterns and experiences in their mind already. But as a beginner, you really need something like that. So there is a slow improvement in this area, but we still need more. We still need more of that.
Briefly going back to the Scandinavian tradition, do you know the Utopia project?
Oh, yes, very well.
What was that all about?
Well, in a way, you can say it was the first user-centered design experiment, where you did user-centered design in a serious way.
When was this?
In the middle of the 80s, I guess. So the whole notion was that they were supposed to design this new tool for people in the graphics business. And the company wanted to create these new automated tools that would get rid of the professionals working in the workshops.
Talking about the printing, the print shops, etc.
Print shops, yes. So they created this kind of a research project together with the union. Instead of being opposed to the new technology, they worked with the professionals to come up with creative new ways of using the technology that would preserve and enhance the skill they have had already. So instead of removing them as professionals, they really tried to build tools that would enhance their ability to do good work. And that led to a kind of breakthrough design ideas about using high-end displays, touch screens, and things that was not really around at that time. And it really created this new way of approaching a design task, which was much more user-oriented and human-oriented. And it has been, over time, been translated over time, and now it's kind of the really important examples of how you can change a tradition in research and how you can also change practice if you really try to. But so it was a very successful. Of course, it didn't change the business over time. The printing business really changed. So, but it was a good example anyhow of. And it stayed in people's memory, and it's still used to this day as a good example.
Well, where we are doing the recording right now, there used to be a print shop, and this was the place where the ink was kept, I think.
Ah, okay. Oh, that's fascinating.
Why is knowledge of the user important in design?
Well, you can't design without a user. You can design for users, but it doesn't really matter. You can never claim as a designer that you have a good design, but the user doesn't understand it. Or the user, sometimes you hear this notion that you have stupid users. I mean, a designer claim they have stupid users, but it's never the case. It's always the user who is the final judge of the design. But it's also important to remember that when we talk about users here, I always make the distinction between the user and the client. And the user and client is two different things. The designer usually works for a client. And the client is the decision maker and the person who pays for the design project. While the user is the person who is going to use the final design. And those two are, in most cases, not the same.
Mass-produced products.
No. Yeah. Well, and even in systems, I mean, you have someone, a company who is your client, but you design maybe for the company's customers. But in both cases, it doesn't really matter how you do those definitions. At the end, design is all about people, purpose, and context. So you have to design for the specific people, for the specific purpose, and the specific context.
In American U.S. academia, what is the position of HCI? How is it evolving?
Well, that's a good question, and it's difficult to answer a short answer to that. We're in a transition phase, I would say. The tradition of HCI comes out of ergonomics and cognitive psychology. But what we see today is a strong move towards more design-oriented HCI. And that also changes the relation between HCI and other disciplines. I mean, if in the early days, if we look at who was hired to teach HCI in university, it was almost in a majority of the people came from psychology. Today, I'm not so sure. I know in our school and I know some other good schools, it's more design-oriented people that come in as teachers of HCI. And that will over time change the field. And what we can see is there, for instance, next year's the big conference in the area, the CHI conference,
which is the most
prestigious international conference in the field. The theme for next year is design. And they are changing the structure of the conference. They are changing the focus of sessions. And they are focusing more and more on design. And this also, the interesting thing with this is that HCI and interaction design is starting to see its relationship to other design disciplines more. So we see starting to see the relationship with architecture and product design and graphic design and urban design more than in the early days, where the relationship was with psychology and sociology and more academic disciplines.
This is an added dimension to the discipline, which will then again become more complex, and the design space will once again become a lot larger, don't you think, by?
Yes. It actually makes the design challenge more difficult in a way. When you move from being a more narrow scientific discipline to become a more open design discipline, the nature of the discipline changes. And it becomes more difficult in some way. And it also changes in nature. It changes from being more of a scientific discipline to becoming a design discipline.
Envisioning, thinking about the future.
Yeah. It's not about trying to figure out how the world is today. It becomes the question of what kind of world do we want? What kind of tools do we need and really want, and be able to envision that?
But how far ahead can we think? I mean, is it relevant to think about what the world could be like in 50 years?
Well, we can speculate. I would say that if you talk to really, if you can say that, good designers or maybe even famous designers, it's obvious that that's a group of people that always have the long perspective in their mind. They always think 5, 10, 50 years ahead. They try to figure out where things are moving, how their field is right now, where it is right now, and where it's going to be in 5, 10, 20 years. And they become, in a way, also visionaries. Because design is also, it is about trying to figure out, we talk about the context is important in design and people are important. But when we design, we don't really design for the people who are here right now, for the context we have right now. If you want to design something that's sustainable over time, you have to be able to design something that will work in 5 years too, maybe 10 years from now. So you have to be able to have that kind of future-oriented way of thinking.
Why is multidisciplinarity important, assuming that you find it important?
Oh, it's really, really important. And it's very simple, because everything we design is always, say, a carrier of all aspects of life. I mean, we want things to be beautiful, efficient, functional, sustainable, maybe durable, easy to understand, easy to learn. I mean, we all know that we need all this. We ask all this from the products that we design. And it's not possible. I mean, no individual can have the competence and skills to design all these aspects. So in a design team, it's also proven from studies and experience that if you want to have successful design teams, you really need to have people with different backgrounds, different experience, different skills. Because that's the only way you can cope with the complexity of the design.
What would your advice be to a young, starting human-computer interaction designer? What should she or he do to become even better?
One thing is you have to start to think as a designer. And one of the basic things that you have to do to think as a designer is to look at the world as being designed. When you start to look at the world as everything is actually designed around you, and you start to kind of analyze or at least critique the world around you, you start to see that some things are ugly, some are really bad, some are good. And what you do when you do that exercise all the time with everything you see around you, you build up your own sensibility and judgment of good design. And I would say that's the most important thing you can do as a young designer. It's really to try to understand the world around you. Why do things look like this?
Okay, which brings me to topic of design rationale. When you said, you know, why do things look like that? a lot of work has done about design rationale being, you know, explaining, rationalizing your design decisions in through some tool or some framework. It hasn't really worked very well. There's been a lot of talk about it also at the Nordic High conference we went to. I believe you are a proponent of design rationale. So how would you go about rationalizing? I mean, rationalizing sounds a little bit negative, by justifying, rather, grounding your design decisions in theory, knowledge of the users.
Well, yes, I'm a proponent of design rationale. I'm not a proponent of a specific methodology of doing it, really. I don't think that's necessary. What I do think it's extremely important for a designer to practice and train his or her ability to rationalize the design that you come up with. And that means for me only to be able to really understand why you make the decisions you make, why you make the choices you make, why you make the judgment you make during the process. And why, in a sense, you don't really have to do that unless you want to sell something, of course, then you have to probably talk for your product. But apart from that, it's not for the design product per se. It's for being able to develop your design skills. So for me, design rationale is the way to both explore and develop your own competence. Because if you don't reflect upon your own competence, if you don't reflect upon what kind of principles you use when you design, what kind of ground values you have in your design, then you don't really know what you're doing. But if you do that, you can also be critical to your own values and principles, and you can start to change them, and you can maybe play with them, and you can try to do things opposite to the way you usually do them. And that means that you explore your own design ability, and it really becomes a way for you to become a better designer.
When you discussed design rationale just now, you mainly talked about assumptions, values, attitudes. Didn't talk as much about the basic science underlying signs of man as a cognitive beast, and also, of course, knowledge about, for example, bimanual skills. Can those underlie design rationale as well, in your opinion?
Oh yes, of course. I mean, I would say that they only underlie the design based on a judgment that you made. I mean, the basic judgment is, okay, should I use this scientific knowledge in my design? So there is this basic judgment that you make first, that where you say, okay, I really want to design this in accordance with these findings about the human nature or ergonomics or whatever it is. So that's the major decision you do. Then, of course, you can apply that knowledge in your design. That becomes part of your design rationale, of course. But the important thing is the basic decisions you make in your design process to come up with any kind of design. And this has been explored and developed by quite a few design researchers over the last few years. And I think it's quite well established that the process of making your design thinking explicit and trying to explain it to other people really helps you to develop your design skills.
I would like to close now and briefly indicate that indeed you have two excellent books at Amazon, among others. There's the book Thoughtful Interaction Design, published by MIT Press, 2004, which you co-authored. Another book that you co-authored is The Design Way, which was published in 2003, I believe, and which I can, as I said already, certainly recommend. A Thoughtful Interaction Design, I read. Design Way, I skipped through, but there seem to be a lot of excellent ideas in there as well. So it leaves me to thank you for the time you spent here, and I hope the audience found this even in the slightest interesting.
Thank you very much. 3, 2.